Welcome to our Physiological Reviews podcast. I am Dr. Sadish Matalon. I am the editor-in-chief of Physiological Reviews, the most cited physiology journal in the world, with a 2019 impact factor of 25.6. Today, we are joined by Dr. Stefano Romanolli, Director of Oncological Anesthesia and Intensive Care Medicine in the Department of Anesthesia and Intensive Care at the Carnegie University Hospital and Professor of Anesthesia and Intensive Care in the University of Florence. Dr. Romanolli has published almost 160 articles on all aspects of anesthesia and hemodynamics. He's the senior author of a review article, SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, From the Beds to the Bedside, published online on June 30th, 2020. Since then, the paper has been downloaded almost 10,000 times, has received 40 total citations, and has an attention score of 57. This is a great achievement. Thank you, Dr. Romanolli, for your great effort and for you joining us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Matalon.
Dr. Romanolli, I wonder if you can give us a brief account of your experience in taking care of patients with COVID-19 in Italy. Specifically, what was the situation in June 2020 when the article was published, and what is the situation now? Has vaccination made a difference in the spread of virus in Italy and Europe? How concerned are you with most recent reports of side effects associated with vaccination and the emergence of new strains of this virus?
Starting from the first part of the question, Italy is one of the European countries that have been hit hardest by COVID-19, with over 4 million cases and 120,000 deaths. Our article was written during the second wave, 8 months after the first case and before the vaccination campaign has started. A few days ago, an Italian newspaper published a very positive article that in English can be translated as "The Effects of Vaccines in Italy, Death, Hospitalizations, and Infections Collapse." In other words, deeply decrease. And this is the situation now. We have almost any kind of commercial activity, restaurants and schools. In Italy, the campaign started on December 31, 2020, after the approval by the European Medicines Agency of the first anti-COVID-19 vaccine. Until today, in Italy, we have vaccinated about 20 million people out of total 60 million citizens. And now 43 is the median age of new cases. The significant reduction in age is probably one of the most evident effects of the first vaccination campaign that was dedicated to over 80 years old people. Secondly, vaccination is mandatory for healthcare workers. Italy has become the first country in Europe to make vaccination against COVID-19 mandatory for healthcare workers. What about Europe? We have updated information from the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control. We know that virus circulation in Europe currently remains high, but significantly decreasing during the last weeks. The cumulative vaccination uptake in the European Union is still low in the adult population aged 18 years and older, although higher in specific groups of population targeted in the initial phase of the COVID-19 vaccination rollout, such as old people and healthcare workers. The vaccination campaign is now involving middle-aged and younger people. Then you asked me about side effects associated with vaccination. First of all, vaccines are the most powerful tool in ensuring public health, and COVID-19 vaccines play a crucial role in contributing to control the pandemic together with the respect of social distancing, hand washing, and wearing masks. All the adverse event reports raise the question of causality or coincidence. Cerebral venous sinus thrombosis with thrombocytopenia is a rare and serious condition that has been described in Europe following receipt of vaccines which use an adenoviral vector. a mechanism similar to the autoimmune heparin-induced thrombocytopenia has been proposed by scientists. Here, the case of causal relationship with vaccine administration includes a much higher reported rate of cerebral venous sinus thrombosis with thrombocytopenia than the background rate that is much lower. But the key concept is that when compared to no vaccine, the vaccines, including those that have been associated with the rare vascular complication, far exceed the risks of all groups at this time.
Dr. Romanoli, thank you so much for this very thorough discussion of the situation in Europe and the great advantages of being vaccinated. As you know, symptoms and severity of COVID-19 vary significantly among affected patients. In another article published in Physiological Reviews, Dr. Mathey, one of the leading experts in ARDS, and his co-authors proposed that increased levels of plasmin, which along with other proteases, increase the infectivity of COVID by cleaving the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, may be responsible for the worst outcome in elderly patients as well as those with a number of comorbidities when infected with SARS. This led some investigators to propose that administration of agents that decrease plasmin levels, such as tranexamic acid, in the early stages of COVID may be beneficial in decreasing the severity of the disease. However, others point out to coagulation problems and advocate the use of anticoagulants, especially in the later ages of COVID. Can you comment on this subject, please? Also, in your experience, what other factors may contribute to worse outcomes in the elderly patients infected with COVID?
A review published last year suggests that plasmin, a protease that may cleave the spike proteins of SARS-CoV-2, may increase the virulence of the virus and increase the ability to invade cells. Moreover, many patients with chronic illness have a higher level of plasminogen and plasmin, and it was suggested that this may be one of the reasons these patients had greater morbidity of mortality from SARS-CoV-2 infection. So the idea suggested by Dr. Wagner to suppress plasmin by using tranexamic acid to prevent disease progression of COVID-19 is clearly attractive and very, very interesting. However, it should be noted that tranexamic acid may have the adverse side effects of thrombosis. In this light, it could be considered hazardous and might favor thrombosis, especially after the occurrence of some cases of cerebral venous thrombosis. Early administration of tranexamic acid would prevent or decrease the onset of severe symptoms, including the need for admission to intensive care units. Two clinical trials started, but the second one was withdrawn for low recruitment. However, the use of tranexamic acid is not recommended due to the risk of thrombogenic properties. So today, I don't know if new future data will support the use of this drug in these patients, how and in which phase of the disease. So just to conclude, now comorbidities probably together with age represent the major aspect in terms of probability to develop more severe forms of COVID-19.
Just to follow that up, in your own practice, would you administer anticoagulants to people with COVID? And at which stage, early on or later on in the disease?
Early on, low molecular weight heparin dose just after the admission to the hospital. Not at home, but when the patient comes to the hospital, we use anticoagulants, low molecular weight heparin, full dose.
Excellent, thank you. The dreaded complication of COVID-19 is, as you know very well, the development of acute lung injury and adult respiratory distress syndrome. Are there any evidence-based therapeutics that show promise? Do you think that researchers will be able to develop promising therapeutics or, like in ARDS from any cause, management of COVID-19 will consist of mechanical ventilation and supplemental oxygen to alleviate hypoxemia and to avoid multi-organ failure?
therapy for acute respiratory distress syndrome is substantially supportive. In general, I don't think that we have new or dedicated therapies for COVID-19 ARDS, except for one unproven but potentially useful new treatment, that is the inhalation sedation with halogenates like isoflurane, sevoflurane, or desflurane that we are now using in some patients. Established therapies for ARDS consist of lung protective ventilation aimed at mitigating iatrogenic damage from mechanical ventilation. And lung protective ventilation remains the pillar of the ARDS therapy with low tidal volume, low plateau pressure, and higher PEEP positive end expiratory pressure and low driving pressure. Propositioning is a well-established therapy in ARDS with a 90-day mortality benefit. It optimizes lung recruitment and lung perfusion while augmenting the functional size of the lung. Finally, we have also two rescue therapies, paralysis and venovenous extracorporeal membrane oxygenation for refractory hypoxemia. Neuromuscular blockade commonly has been used to promote ventilator synchrony with the patient and improve gas exchange. And lastly, when all the previous attempts to save the patients have failed, venovenous extracorporeal membrane oxygenation could be considered. The last new potential therapeutic approach could be the inhalation sedation with halogenates, like isoflurane, sevoflurane, or desflurane, that we are now using, as I said. There are some large randomized studies now enrolling patients in Europe with the aim at evaluating the potential benefit of halogenates in severe COVID-19 respiratory failure.
Thank you very much. This is very, very promising. If I may follow that briefly, one of a very famous Italian physician, Dr. Gattinoni, had proposed the use of prone positioning. Are you placing patients with COVID-19 in the prone position?
Absolutely, yes. Prone position has demonstrated to improve gas exchange in almost all the patients or the major part of the patients. And we use prone positioning in both mechanically ventilated but also spontaneously breathing patients.
Very nice. Thank you so much. And finally, in the last question, which bench discoveries have helped you as a clinician to take care of your patients, not only for COVID, but for any aspect of respiratory disease?
I can say we have some drugs and some aspect from a technological point of view, non-pharmacological support. First of all, according to the Surviving Sepsis campaign, remdesivir in COVID-19 respiratory failure is suggested for adults with severe COVID-19 who do not require mechanical ventilation, ideally within 72 hours of positive SARS-CoV-2 polymerase chain reaction or antigen testing. Second, dexamethasone is recommended by both the U.S. National Institutes of Health and the Surviving Sepsis campaign for COVID-19 patients who are either mechanically ventilated or require supplemental oxygen. Third, tocilizumab, an immunosuppressive humanized monoclonal antibody against the interleukin-6 receptors, has demonstrated in the recent recovery trial that in hospitalized COVID-19 patients not receiving mechanical ventilation with hypoxia and systemic inflammation improved survival. For the second part of the answer, non-pharmacological support and technology, we should consider non-invasive mechanical ventilation, different interfaces like helmet or others, and also the more recent but really very useful for our patient, high-flow nasal cannula.
This is wonderful. Dr. Emanuele, we know how busy you are. Thank you so much, first of all, for taking care of the very sick patients. And thank you very much for your contribution to Physiological Reviews and taking the time to participate in this podcast. We look forward to interacting with you in the future and your future contribution to the literature and Physiological Reviews.
Thank you, Dr. Madalan. Thank you very much.